imagine, like, you're sitting in a restaurant, right?
Okay.
Okay. You just finished eating this really heavy meal, and before you even ask for the check, your smartwatch vibrates. You look down, and it's telling you that your insulin resistance is spiking. But, and this is the crazy part, you didn't give it any blood.
Right. No needles.
Exactly. You didn't prick your finger or anything. It just knows. Or imagine speaking to your phone, asking it to pull data from some email, cross-reference it with a photo you took yesterday, and then text a summary to your boss.
Yeah.
And the phone is literally already executing that command before you've even finished speaking your sentence.
I mean, it sounds completely like science fiction, honestly.
It really does.
But what we're actually looking at here is a new baseline reality.
Yeah.
The lag time between, you know, our thoughts, our physical biology, and our devices actually executing complex tasks based on that data, it's essentially disappearing.
Exactly. And that is exactly what we are exploring today. So welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are taking a massive shortcut to get you fully informed on what might be, honestly, the most consequential tech launch of the decade.
Easily.
We've got our hands on this really exhaustive teardown report from Tech and Analysis. It's titled The Made by Google 2026 Autopsy.
Great title, by the way.
Right. So good. So our goal today is to look at Google's 2026 hardware drop. So we're talking the Pixel 11 family, the Pixel Watch 5, the brand new Pixel Tag, and really figure out how zero latency on-device AI is fundamentally changing the very nature of the tech we carry around every day.
Yeah, and, you know, autopsy really is, like, the most accurate word for the source material we're looking at today.
Because they tore it all apart.
Exactly. Tech and Analysis didn't just, like, read the marketing brochures and call it a day. They deconstructed the actual architecture, the physical silicon, the software ecosystem, all of it, to figure out the exact mechanisms Google is using to pull this off. And importantly, how those mechanisms stack up against the current strategies we're seeing from Apple and Samsung.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we get distracted by the shiny titanium hinges and the blindingly bright screens,
which are very distracting.
They are, and we will definitely get to those.
Yeah.
But we have to start down the engine room.
Yep.
We have to start with the silicon brain that makes this entire 2026 technological leap even possible. I mean, you can't understand the devices without understanding the chip.
You really can't, because without that foundation, the rest of the hardware features wouldn't even physically function, like, at all.
Right.
And the foundation here is the new Google Tensor G6 processor. According to the teardown, the big news, the really massive shift, is that Google has officially pivoted its foundry manufacturing.
Right, because for years, they were using Samsung to manufacture their Tensor chips, which, let's be honest, came with a lot of baggage.
A ton of baggage.
But for the G6, they officially migrated to TSMC's advanced 3-nanometer process node.
The N3E process, specifically.
Right, N3E. So what does that actually mean for the person holding the phone, like, in plain English?
Well, it changes the entire physical profile of the device. For anyone who has followed mobile hardware for a while, the historical complaint with earlier Tensor generations was always thermal throttling.
Always.
Right. When the processor had to do heavy math, it drew too much power, generated way too much heat, and then the phone literally had to intentionally slow itself down or throttle so it wouldn't, you know, melt your hand.
So it gets hot, so it pumps the brakes.
Precisely. But by moving to TSMC's 3-nanometer process, the physical distance the electrons have to travel inside the chip is vastly reduced.
Just because the components are crammed that much closer together.
Exactly. And less distance means less resistance, which means less power is required, and crucially, less heat is generated. The Tech and Analysis report notes a massive 40% reduction in thermal draw compared to previous generations.
40%. That is huge.
Yeah.
So is this basically like, think about it like swapping out a gas-guzzling, overheating combustion engine for a hyper-efficient, cool-running EV motor?
That's a great analogy, actually.
But it isn't just about hitting a higher top speed on a track for 5 seconds. It is about endurance. You can ride it hard, mile after mile, without the engine temp gauge ever moving.
That is the perfect way to look at it. Because when a chip runs that efficiently and that cool, it frees up the thermal headroom to do much heavier lifting on a continuous basis.
Right.
And in 2026, the heavy lifting isn't about, you know, rendering a higher frame rate in a mobile video game. It's about artificial intelligence.
Ah, right.
The upgraded Tensor Processing Unit, the NPU, is now capable of executing Gemini Nano models entirely locally.
Locally, like on the device.
Entirely on the device. There is no cloud latency whatsoever.
I actually want to read a quote from the report that really struck me when I saw it. So the International Semiconductor and Microchip Architecture Institute, quite a mouthful, they said the Tensor G6 architecture, quote, prioritizes low-latency AI agent execution over superficial synthetic graphic scores.
Man, that quote is vital.
It really is.
Because it completely defines the new era of computing we're in. I mean, for a decade, the industry was just obsessed with brute force graphics.
Pushing pixels.
Right. They wanted screens to look sharper, animations to feel smoother. But technology has shifted now. The priority is seamless AI agent execution.
Yeah.
The user experience is no longer just about what you see on the glass. It's about this invisible layer of intelligence, anticipating what you need to do, and executing it instantly in the background.
So if this 3-nanometer chip runs that cool, it fundamentally changes what you can physically build around it, right?
Exactly.
Because suddenly you don't need these massive thermal cooling systems, vapor chambers, and all that, taking up half the space inside the phone.
Which frees up a ton of room.
Right. Which leads us sequentially right into the primary vessels for this chip.
Yeah.
The mobile powerhouses, the Pixel 11 smartphone lineup.
Yeah. Because those thermal constraints are gone, Google is able to engineer 4 distinct models this year.
Okay, break them down.
So you have the standard Pixel 11, the Pixel 11 Pro, the larger Pixel 11 Pro XL, and then their flagship foldable, the Pixel 11 Pro Fold.
I'm honestly still trying to wrap my head around the physical engineering of that fold.
It's pretty wild.
It really is. The teardown says they're utilizing a completely redesigned titanium hinge mechanism, and they brought the folded thickness of this device down to under 9.5 millimeters.
Yeah.
A foldable phone, folding completely in half, and it is less than 9.5 millimeters thick. That's thinner than most regular phones with the case on them.
Oh, easily. And the titanium allows for this incredibly rigid structure without the bulk of those older aluminum alloys.
Right.
But the screens themselves are just as structurally notable here. Across the entire lineup, they are utilizing these next-generation actual OLED panels.
And the raw numbers are just staggering.
They really are. They are hitting 3,600 nits of peak brightness.
That's practically a flashlight.
It is. And they pair that with dynamic LTPO technology, meaning the screen's refresh rate can scale dynamically from 1 hertz all the way up to 120 hertz.
They also upgraded the triple camera system, right? The standout feature seems to be this 10x optical quality zoom that relies heavily on generative AI image reconstruction.
Yes, the camera architecture is fascinating this year.
But, and I'm going to push back here for a second.
Go for it.
I just have to ask on behalf of everyone listening, do you really need a 3,600 nit screen on your phone?
It sounds like a lot.
I mean, are we just watching a meaningless hardware spec war at this point? Like,
yeah.
When is a screen just too bright? It feels a bit like we were just inflating numbers for the marketing brochure.
What's fascinating here is that on the surface, it absolutely sounds like specification overkill.
Right.
But taken analysis makes a crucial point in the autopsy. These physical upgrades, the blinding brightness, the generative AI camera, they aren't just specs for the sake of specs.
Okay.
They are strictly necessary to support the advanced local Gemini Nano software stack.
Wait, really? How?
Well, the hardware has basically finally had to catch up to the AI's potential.
Okay, break that down for me. Because how does screen brightness relate to AI? That feels disconnected.
So think about the multimodal context capabilities we'll discuss later, right?
Okay.
If your on-device AI is parsing live visual inputs from your camera while you're outdoors,
yep,
and projecting, say, an augmented reality overlay onto your screen in direct midday sunlight, you need hardware that won't bottleneck that software.
I see.
That 3,600 nit display ensures that when Gemini provides a visual cue outside, it is instantly readable.
No squinting or covering the screen with your hand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But to your point, running a screen that incredibly bright would normally kill a smartphone battery in like 20 minutes.
Right. It would just drain it, which is where the dynamic LTPO comes in.
Exactly. LTPO dictates how many times per second the screen refreshes.
Right.
When you are looking at a static AI-generated text summary outdoors at 3,600 nits, the screen drops to refreshing just 1 time per second, 1 hertz.
Wow. Okay.
It saves a monumental amount of power. Then the second you touch it to scroll, it ramps back up to 120 hertz for smoothness.
That is ridiculously clever. And what about the camera? How is a 10x zoom tied into AI instead of just, you know, normal glass lenses?
It's all about generative image reconstruction.
Okay.
A traditional 10x optical zoom requires this long physical glass periscope inside the phone, which takes up way too much physical depth.
Right, which you can't have if the phone is super thin.
Exactly. So Google is using a shorter optical lens, but the Tensor G6 NPU is actively rebuilding the missing image data in real time.
Rebuilding it?
Yes. It analyzes the raw optical input, cross-references it with its trained models, and literally generates the missing pixels to maintain perfect clarity at huge distances. Mm.
So the AI is doing the physical work that glass used to do.
Precisely.
Man, building the physical infrastructure required to let the AI actually operate in the real world? That makes total sense now.
It's a huge shift.
Which brings us perfectly to the next piece of this ecosystem. Because if the smartphone is the heavy lifting powerhouse, the smartwatch is the frictionless interface.
Yes.
We are moving from the pocket to the wrist, where this integration gets highly, highly personal. Let's dive into the Pixel Watch 5.
This is honestly where Google made some of the most user-centric leaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. They finally addressed a long-standing demand right out of the gate by offering two chassis sizes this time, a 41mm and a 45mm option.
Which people have been begging for.
Forever. And both feature an actual AMOLED panel hitting up to 3,000 nits.
Again with the brightness. But I am looking at the battery specs in the report, though, and I'm highly skeptical.
I was too.
They claim a 48-hour battery life. But this watch is supposedly running continuous health sensing and processing on-device AI commands. How does a watch doing all of that not die by noon?
Well, it comes down to a complete departure from their usual hardware strategy. There were rumors they would use a custom chip, but instead they went with Qualcomm's dual-chip Snapdragon W5 Gen 2 platform.
Okay.
That dual-chip architecture is the actual secret to the 48-hour battery life.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Thinking about this dual chip setup, is it essentially like, think of a corporate building, right?
Okay, yeah.
Like you have a night watchman who handles all the routine stuff. He checks the doors, monitors the security cameras. In the case of the watch, the ultra low power coprocessor is that night watchman.
Yeah.
It parses the background sensor streams, monitors your heart rate, and handles basic telemetry all day and all night using almost zero energy.
That is a very accurate way to map it out.
And then you have the CEO, which is the main W5 chip.
Right.
The CEO only wakes up and comes out of their office when there is a major problem to solve, like loading a heavy map interface or executing a complex AI voice request.
Exactly.
And because the night watchman handles like 90% of the daily routine, the CEO gets to sleep, saving massive amounts of battery.
It's brilliant. And that night watchman is working harder than ever now because the health telemetry on the Pixel Watch 5 has crossed into entirely new medical territory.
Yeah, let's talk about this.
We are not just counting steps or tracking basic sleep cycles anymore. The Watch 5 introduces advanced blood pressure trend monitoring paired with emergency respiratory distress alerts.
Wait, I have to stop you. I mentioned this at the top of the show, but how is a watch tracking insulin resistance?
It sounds impossible.
It does. It's not drawing blood. Are we talking about it analyzing sweat or is it something else?
No, no sweat. It is doing it entirely through optical sensors and AI pattern recognition.
Okay, wow.
The watch uses advanced photoplethysmography, PPG sensors.
Big word.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It uses those to measure micro changes in blood flow and vascular resistance.
Oh, wow.
It tracks your heart rate variability in the hours specifically following a meal. Then local Gemini medical models analyze those super nuanced vascular patterns against known indicators of metabolic distress.
To track signs of insulin resistance over time.
Exactly.
That is incredible. It's inferring a chemical state in your body just by watching the physical mechanics of your blood flow.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is a profound paradigm shift.
Absolutely.
We are moving away from reactive medicine, you know, going to a doctor only after you already feel sick.
Right.
To proactive metabolic health management, running continuously, 24/7 on your wrist.
And interacting with all this data is entirely different now, too. Mm. The report talks about a feature called Raise to Talk.
Oh, yeah.
It is a low-latency Gemini AI gesture that completely bypasses touchscreen inputs.
Yeah.
You literally just lift your wrist, and because the microphone is instantly active, you can execute complex contextual queries.
Without saying, hey, Google first.
Right. You can just tell it to archive a specific Gmail thread or start a highly tailored workout completely hands-free. They also added double pinch gesture support, so you just tap your fingers together to confirm alerts.
And you know, the telemetry data in the Tekken report underscores how vital the operating system is here, where OS 6 has vastly superior memory management.
Because it has to juggle a lot.
It has to handle all these multi-threaded sensor streams simultaneously, the dual frequency GPS plotting 3D urban building terrains, the optical insulin tracking, the microphone parsing a raise-to-talk voice command,
All at the same
and
time.
it handles it all without stuttering.
Well, as impressive as that is, we can't look at Google in a vacuum here.
No, we definitely can't.
We have to evaluate where this software ecosystem stands against its biggest rivals. Let's look at the AI battleground of 2026. Gemini versus Apple Intelligence and Samsung Galaxy AI.
This was honestly the strategic climax of the teardown for
Oh,
me.
totally.
And the deciding factor in this battleground really comes down to one crucial metric: speed. By pairing their hyperscale cloud infrastructure with the local Tensor G6 NPU execution, Google has managed to achieve sub 50 millisecond local voice response latency.
Sub 50 milliseconds.
Yeah.
Just think about the last time you asked your smart device, your phone or your smart speaker, to do something. You say the wake word, you ask the question,
Right.
and then you wait.
Right. The awkward pause.
The lights spin, it thinks, has to package your audio, send it to some server farm in another state, process it, and then send it back.
Which takes a second or two.
But sub 50 milliseconds, that is the threshold where the human brain perceives an interaction as
Right.
literally instantaneous.
Yeah.
How much would true zero latency change your workflow? It changes it from feeling like you're operating this clunky machine to feeling like you're just having a natural conversation with a real person.
And that speed is a stark, stark contrast to the competition right now.
Yeah. How are the others holding up?
Well, according to the teardown matrix, Apple Intelligence is currently facing pretty severe localized language rollout delays, and they have heavily restricted primary language support.
Ouch.
And Samsung's Galaxy AI, on the other hand, is still relying heavily on a high latency cloud handshake for a lot of its advanced features.
So they still have that awkward pause.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Gemini is supporting over 40 global languages natively right now, complete with regional idioms and dialect nuances.
That's huge. But the capability that really caught my eye in the report is multimodal context comprehension. How does that actually work in practice?
So multimodal means the AI isn't just looking at one type of data at a time.
Okay.
It can parse live audio from the microphone, visual data from what the camera is looking at, and the text currently on your screen, all simultaneously.
All at once.
Yes. So if you point your camera at a concert poster on the street and just say, "Check if I have meetings the morning after this," Gemini reads the date on the poster via the camera, parses your voice command, cross-references your calendar app, and answers you.
Just like that.
It's just like that.
It also uses autonomous app agents to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning it can execute those multi-step tasks across different applications automatically without you having to manually open the calendar app yourself.
Exactly. It drives the apps for you. But, you know, the local execution isn't just about how fast it answers you. It is fundamentally about privacy.
Right. Because we just talked about the Pixel Watch 5 tracking your insulin resistance and your blood pressure trends.
Yeah.
That is deeply personal, highly sensitive medical data.
Very sensitive.
I would absolutely not want that sitting on a server somewhere where it could be breached.
Nobody would. Which is exactly why the Tensor G6 chip features hardware-level privacy sandboxing.
Okay, what does that mean?
They built a secure enclave, which is a physically isolated vault right on the silicon itself. Your sensitive user telemetry is processed entirely inside that local enclave.
So it never even touches the internet.
It never goes to the cloud.
Yeah.
You get the benefit of world-class AI medical analysis without your raw health data ever leaving your physical possession.
Man, that is a distinct competitive advantage when consumers are weighing who to trust with their data.
It's a brilliant strategy. It's not just selling speed, it's selling security through physical architecture.
Okay, so to wrap up this 2026 landscape, we need to connect these primary devices to the broader ecosystem and give you, the listener, some actionable buying advice. Because Google also dropped a brand new product category.
Right, Google introduced its inaugural Pixel Tag Tracker.
Finally.
Yeah, this is their direct competitor to the Apple AirTag and the Samsung Galaxy Smart Tag, too.
But Apple and Samsung already own this space completely. What is Google doing differently here to stand out?
Well, they are leveraging the sheer scale of the global Android Find My Device network, which is structurally immense. And the Pixel Tag itself features a dual frequency ultra wideband, or UWB, spatial chip.
just to clarify for everyone, UWB is different from standard Bluetooth, right?
Yes, very different. Bluetooth tells you if an item is generally nearby, like somewhere in the room.
Okay.
Ultra wideband operates at a very high frequency and provides exact spatial direction.
Like a compass.
Exactly. It allows your phone to point an arrow on the screen and say, your keys are 3.2 feet away underneath that specific couch cushion.
That is so much more useful than just a beeping sound.
Oh, absolutely. The tag is also IP68 rated for water and dust resistance, and it runs on a standard user-replaceable CR2032 battery that lasts for a year and a half.
So they are thoroughly fleshing out the tracking network. But the thing that ties all this hardware together, across the board, is their software promise. Google is guaranteeing 7 years of Android OS and security patches.
7 years.
That means a device bought in 2026 will receive feature drops and security updates all the way through 2033.
Which completely alters the life cycle of the device.
It does.
However, you do have to weigh that software promise against physical battery degradation. Over 7 years, a lithium battery will degrade. That's just chemistry.
Right, they all do.
But because the TSMC 3-nanometer chip runs so much cooler, as we discussed, the battery is subjected to way less heat stress over its lifespan.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, which means it will actually retain its charging capacity significantly longer than previous generations.
So what does this all mean? Let's distill the final verdict from the tech and analysis. Is it time for you to actually upgrade?
Always the big question.
Right. And the advisory in the report is remarkably clear.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a legacy user, say you were holding on to a Pixel 8 or a Pixel Watch 2 or 3, upgrading is highly recommended.
It's a huge jump.
The leap in thermal management, the display technology, and especially the blood pressure and Gemini rays to talk features on the watch, they represent a true generational shift.
And the teardown also provides specific recommendations based on different user needs.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you are a power user who requires maximum battery endurance and telephoto camera performance, the Pixel 11 Pro XL is the target device.
Okay.
If you are a professional seeking pocketable multitasking efficiency, the Pixel 11 Pro Fold is the clear recommendation.
But the report is objective, and we have to note the cons too. There is a premium baseline pricing for those top-tier models, the 11 Pro XL and the Fold. And despite the incredible silicon efficiency we've been raving about, the actual wired charging speeds remain moderate.
Yeah, they really haven't pushed that envelope.
No, they haven't adopted the ultra-high wattage charging standards we are seeing from Chinese competitors.
Right.
So you have to weigh the moderate charging speeds and that premium price against the immense value of a 7-year software commitment.
Right.
Which guarantees strong resale value well into the next decade.
You know, when you look at the entire board, the convergence of TSMC 3-nanometer silicon, the titanium engineering of the Fold, the zero-latency Gemini AI agents, and that Pixel Tag tracking ecosystem, this launch marks Google's full maturation into a premier hardware manufacturer.
Truly.
For a long time, Google was seen as a software company just trying to make hardware.
Yeah, an experiment almost.
Exactly. But this teardown confirms they have arrived. True innovation is happening here because top-tier custom hardware is finally combined with world-class AI seamlessly.
It is definitely a watershed moment. So let's quickly recap the logical through line of what we've discovered today.
Let's do it.
We started at the microscopic level, looking at the hyper-efficient TSMC 3-nanometer Tensor G6 chip that finally solved the thermal throttling issues of the past.
Yep.
We saw how that cool-running chip enabled a physical mobile powerhouse in the Pixel 11 family, making room for 3,600 nit displays and generative AI cameras that rebuild pixels instead of just magnifying them with glass.
And then we explored how that same dual-chip architecture powers the Pixel Watch 5, literally turning it into a proactive medical device capable of tracking insulin resistance through optical vascular changes, all while processing zero-latency voice commands straight from your wrist.
Right. And we saw how keeping all that highly sensitive processing on-device inside those physical secure enclaves gives Google a really distinct edge in both speed and privacy.
It's just a totally cohesive strategy.
It is incredible how fast this technology is moving and how deeply it is integrating into our biology and our daily routines.
It's moving so fast.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to ponder. We talked at the very beginning about the disappearing lag time between our thoughts and our devices.
We did.
Think about this. If our devices are autonomously monitoring our blood pressure and insulin resistance in the background.
Yeah.
If they are parsing our visual and audio environment in real time, and if they are executing complex contextual tasks with zero latency before we even have to touch a screen?
It gets wild.
At what point does a smartphone or a smartwatch stop being just a tool that we pick up and use and start becoming a literal digital extension of our own nervous system?
Wow, that is a profound question. The boundary between the user and the device is certainly getting thinner every single day.
It really is. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the Made by Google 2026 landscape. We hope this shortcut has left you fully informed and ready for what's next. Keep questioning, stay insanely curious, and we will catch you on the next one.